Hello and welcome to The Culture. My name is Anna.
And my name is Mark.
And we are covering part two of our coverage on La Luz del Mundo. But we have covered part one. Ooh, it was a minute ago.
Hot minute ago. We just didn't finish. We got distracted by shiny people.
We got distracted by the shiny things. We're like a little dog. But we are going to be talking mainly about the documentary series on HBO Max, aka now just Max.
Just the Max.
I'm like, how did Cinemax not care about that? Anyways, whatever.
I just don't see a difference.
Yeah, I don't get it. But it is called Unveiled.
Three-part series.
A little too long.
A little long. Not my favorite doc.
3 hours talking about rough stuff. But yeah, it's on Max, so go and watch that.
Well, we are here to summarize it for you.
Yes, we will summarize because according to my sister, shout out, you know who you are. We didn't summarize good enough for the shiny happy people.
Well enough.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. So, to recap who these people are, basically they are a group that is worldwide. They are typically located in
Mexico
and other Latin American countries.
Heavy Mexico, though.
Heavy Mexico, yes.
Like, if you had to pick a hub,
I feel the hub is there.
That's like, yeah.
Yeah.
Multiple cities.
Yeah. But they're all throughout the world.
Yeah, they're branching.
We've got two, at least, in our local
community.
Municipality.
Multiple within the United States, though.
A lot within the United States.
I mean, and not even in...
Especially in L.A.
In L.A., but also, like, in weird
Georgia.
Spots that you wouldn't see.
Right.
Did I see one in Oregon, too?
Probably.
It's random. Right. Not random, but it's very spread.
Right. They are a group that believes in, again, the restoration idea. The idea that the Christian church was, like, basically so astray for so long that they needed to restore it. The church is founded in 1926 by the oldest of the Joaquin men, Aaron Joaquin, and then he becomes the apostle of God, according to them, kind of like the prophet in Mormonism. And then he dies. His son Samuel becomes it. Again, remember our divine right conversation?
Yes.
Because when he dies, his son Nason becomes the apostle of God.
Definitely while I was watching, it does have kind of a Mormon vibe to it theologically.
Yes.
Definitely not. Okay, easy Mormons. Definitely not the rest of what we're going to talk about. But the vibe is very similar theologically to what is taking place, that someone is here and they bear the burden to lead the church.
Right.
Has sort of a, not really popish, you know what I mean? But sort of along the lines of, we absolutely have to have somebody who's in charge.
Yes.
And this person is not untouchable, but pretty close to being unfallible.
Well, they're the link to God.
Yeah.
Like, you can't get to God besides through their apostle, which is...
Which, weirdly enough, it stays in the same family. I don't know.
God just loves them.
I guess.
So, I hope that was a good enough summary, but... besides that, they're very traditionalistic in that men have all the power, women have none. Women are to be very modest in their dress, and they are to wear head coverings in church and anytime they pray. So, yeah, it's very, you know, typical patriarchal.
Nothing crazy, though, in terms of, like, beliefs. You know what I'm saying? Like, it doesn't.
The only thing is that they're non-Trinitarian.
Right, but it doesn't stem far out to where I'm like, hey, you lost me with this and this, like,
it's not
right
like
off
space
the rip.
Aliens.
Yeah, we're not waiting for the ship to come
take
us home.
It's not Heaven's Gate. Yeah,
no.
So here's the thing, though. Regardless, it kind of, in my eyes, especially in Mexico, operates more like a crime syndicate than a church, because they literally kidnap and kill people or attempt to kill people who go against the church or the leader.
It turns very violent here, whereas some of the groups we've been like recently kind of covering, I'm like, oh, dope, no one dies. No, here people are dying.
Yeah, right.
And a little loosey-goosey in Mexico. You can get away with a lot more stuff.
And when you, like, buy off the police,
yeah,
you know, like, they're politically involved, they're paying people off. Like, it's kind of giving more mobster vibes than anything else.
Definitely. And it all, I think the other part, too, like, if you know a lot about Mexican culture, specifically, like, the church is not just the church. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of these towns are completely built around the church because it becomes a it's a mainstay. So as you're watching the doc, you see how that this group is interacting with the community and how they're giving jobs and, you know, how we're getting people to work for them and all of this stuff. Like, you can't untangle the weave. So these communities are essentially owned and operated by the church.
Right. Yeah. So, and by doing so, they have so much power over the people.
All the power in the world.
So we meet in the first episode of this docuseries, this woman named Xochitl Martin. She is a former LLDM member, and she currently lives in San Diego with her husband and her daughter. And so kind of growing up, she had parents that were addicted to drugs. And so she ended up living with her Aunt Ruth, who was a member of this church, La Luz del Mundo. And she grew up in Silver Lake in Los Angeles. Now, here, we just jump into, like, ick, you know?
It's ick the whole time.
It's ick the whole time.
The whole time. Ick warning.
So, ick warning.
Ick warning, first, trigger warning, all of the warnings.
Okay, so we're jumping right in. We learned that the church has parties, these themed parties, where it's like an Egyptian party or a Greek party. Hey, don't steal my culture.
Vultures.
Roman party. And there were private – so there were, like, these public parties that people would go to, and then there were these, like, private parties, which here's the ick.
Of course.
So – Xochitl is only 13 when she was first taken to the apostle, and her aunt told her to please the apostle, ick, and that she was to do whatever he wanted because nothing was a sin for him. Like, fully, the aunt was just like, here's my underage niece on a silver platter, eat up.
Yeah, as soon as you hear, like, how much reverence they have towards this apostle, you know that it's just no holds barred. Like, it, like, whatever.
But it's just so, like, to me, either these people are all evil, which I don't believe, or they have all been victimized and this is the norm.
It's the cycle.
It's the cycle.
Which we get to the cycle, like, towards the end, right?
So, Xochitl says that there were kids as young as 10 and 11 in there with these secret parties. She said that her first outfit that she wore to this party was so tight and skimpy, and they danced for the apostles to a Britney Spears song. And they were told that basically they were going to be a concubine. Like, they straight up say, like, you are going to be one of the concubines of the apostle of God, and that's a blessing.
I was
going to
say,
a blessing upon us, and it's a blessing upon you and our family.
And your family.
Yes.
That's the part that's crazy, is, like, they want you to be chosen.
Yes.
Like, as in so much as maybe this is degrading and, like, obviously disgusting, like, shout to us, we got picked.
Right.
Like, this is only blessings on blessings on blessings for us and our family, which is just the most backwards way of thinking.
It reminds me of in the past where you, like, would basically sell your daughter for the goat, you know?
How big's the dowry?
Like, kind of.
And yeah.
It's like, now we have favor with the apostle because we're providing our daughter to them.
And you're right. Ugh. Like, the more it takes place, and then you realize you're not the only one.
Yeah.
I think that helps, like, you to normalize the behavior. You know what I mean?
Like, it's like, not just everybody's.
It's not just, like,
happen.
One person. Like, that's super cringe and creepy.
Yeah.
Like, hey, but if it's like, oh, there's seven of us in here. Like, we're special. It's beating down the mind until there's just nothing left.
For sure. So next we meet a girl named Anna. She first starts dancing for the apostle at 14. And it's like, it's so confounding, I think, probably to these young girls, because they're being told to basically be sex slaves in the end, we'll learn, to these leaders. And yet at the same time, they're told by the church, right? You can't dance, you can't wear makeup, you cannot listen to music, unless it's in the presence of the apostle or for the apostle.
Which I think is also smart too, right? Like, these things are, I don't want to say appealing, but like when you're told you can't do something,
right?
But then someone gives you permission to do it. Oh, this is where I can get around like the rules. And then the other thing I was thinking about too is it always starts the same way.
Yeah.
Like you're just dancing.
Right.
Not that big of a deal.
Well, yeah.
Like you
it's the foot in the door thing.
Yeah, you slowly until it's way too late and now you're way too deep.
For sure. Yeah. And you as the victim, just the way our brains work, feel responsible. Like, oh, if I wouldn't have done that, then this wouldn't have happened, you know? And then they feel culpable themselves for what they're doing. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So Anna tells us that the apostle's assistant told her that he had his eyes on her and he would bless her more. She attended a church in East Los Angeles, and the church, again, helped the neighborhood by keeping the kids out of danger and increased property values. So again, you know, shows, like we've talked about before, people don't just join cults. They're getting some value out of something.
Has to be some value.
So this is the reason why. Now, this is when Sam was the apostle, Samuel. He would come about 5 times a year to visit. And when he came one time, he told Anna that she was his and that he needed virgins. Ugh, ick. And he was basically telling her that she had to turn in her virginity and to just go and lay there and wait and be ready. And when she had this assault occur, he was 60. Ick.
I know. I mean, not that it makes it any better if you're younger, because it doesn't, but it just is like...
No, it doesn't, but it does. You know what I mean?
Yeah, in a weird way. Like, you don't want to be like, oh, cool, only 36.
No, it's all bad. It's all bad, for sure. It's but, all like, bad. Mentally, it's worse.
It is. It does get worse.
Yeah.
There's something about it in our minds, I think. Older is worse.
It's not, but it is.
Yeah.
Sorry, everyone. So the first time this was alone, over time, it escalated to orgies with other women. Now, next, we meet Joel Silva Orozco. He was in the cult since birth. His parents were missionaries for the group. He spent 10 years of his life building the temple.
Like legit building the temple.
Yeah.
This is not a metaphor.
Yes. He was an architect, and Samuel chose him to create a new design for the temple. The goal was to create a building without beginning and end.
Hey, how do we feel about the building?
I think it's ugly.
Oh, hot take.
I think it's ugly.
It's a lot.
It's gaudy.
But it's definitely gaudy. But I think that's like the point.
That's the vibe for sure.
I mean, you look at like what they're building off of, like a lot of, you know, heavily Catholic influence, right? Not in this sense, but in the sense of like it should be, it needs to be the center.
It's the
attention getter.
I don't like it.
It has a lot of...
Kind of reminds me of the Mormon temple in San Diego. Have you seen that one?
Yes, I have seen that one.
Yeah, like, it's an eyesore. You're just like, what is that, a spaceship?
It is a lot. But, again, you don't miss it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's true. So, Samuel, according to Joel, was smart because he took tithings, the 10% that he took from everyone, tithings, and he put that money into real estate. So he had hotels and apartments all throughout Mexico. Now, after the temple was built, he wanted to expand even more. And he had a dream that he would expand throughout the whole world. They create, like, their own media as well. They have a news channel.
A whole channel.
Called
yeah.
Beria. Now, Joel, his first wife was... I don't know. She died somehow. And so then after he was asked to marry this other woman, which is called... He was asked to marry this woman, which they were called unconditionals. Basically, the most, like, loyal to the apostle were called unconditionals, and they were the people who kind of had the most power in the group, but also were under the largest control, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely some arranged marriages vibes going on.
Yes. But he wanted to marry Leticia. So Leticia, her story is she was 14 and she was converted at that time. And she was a member for 21 years. She was baptized when Samuel was the leader. And there was a room attached with a peephole in the church. Now, the pastor's wife told her she's going to get a blessing, but you can't tell anyone. You're going to go into the apostle's room, and you're going to give him food, and you're going to offer a massage.
Red flag.
Epstein.
All the red flags.
Oh, it's just a massage.
All the red flags. Don't tell anyone. Anytime anyone says don't tell anyone.
Hey, this is a blessing for you. Don't tell anyone. You're going to give a massage.
Never seen that work out well.
He said, oh, you, and then Samuel tells Leticia, you've learned a lot. Maria has taught you well. He was there for a whole week, and both him and his wife were in there after she had given him a massage. She said, turn off the lights, but don't leave. Then he started kissing her, and he groped her. His wife was right there, and she understood and just told her to obey. Ugh. You know, men are dogs and yuck, but these women, yo, how can you not be protecting these young kids? Like, I get it. Like, I know it's the generational trauma. It's like they're not understanding better. But, like, at the same time, we all have agency. Like, how can you just, like, let this go?
It is.
Ugh, it's gross.
It's very complicated. It seems like it's not. And as you watch, like, as we move forward looking at episodes 2 and 3, like, you see some of the conflicting mindset that a lot of these people have. It's really, really sad.
Yeah. So the last person we'll talk about from episode 1 is, because there's a lot, Alethea. She was a fourth generation member. Her great grandmother, I think, joined the group. And she was in the choir at 7 years old, and she was told by another girl that the servant of God asked for her and that he thought she was very beautiful. She was explained that she was like Abishak in the Bible for King David. Do you know that story?
I was trying to think of it as, like, I was going through. It doesn't, like, ring a bell.
Yeah, maybe that's one of the things that Christianity is just like, let's not talk about it.
Or just, like, it's so minor, but you're like, oh, I'm going to latch onto this identity here.
Yeah. I don't know what that is. But at the time, Samuel was 47 and Alethea was 11. She was 16 when she had her first sexual assault via him. They met, and she was taken up the stairs to a bedroom, and it was just him, and he kissed her on the mouth. He told her to take off all of her clothes, and her younger family member was tied to the bed. He told the girls to kiss each other. He told them to say, thank you for giving me this moment. Oh, no. Then he told them. Wait, I'm confused.
Hey, take better notes.
I think he said to them, thank you for giving me this moment. Yeah. I don't remember. Whatever. It's fine. Whatever. Sorry. Okay. So now this thing about this choir, you know, because I was a choir kid.
Choir kid.
I was a choir kid.
No one pulled you out from a crowd and said, your voice is heavenly. And
well, no.
Okay.
But I am a good singer. I will say that. But in their choir, they all wear white, and the girls wear gold veils, and the men wear gold ties. Ugh, it's just so tacky.
Okay, bro. But have you ever seen a solid choir outfit where you're like, dang, that's fire?
No, why do choir outfits suck?
Choir and band.
Yeah, they're just
never
bad.
Never want. I don't know what the vibe is you're going for, but you got to be the opposite of what that is.
Right. Yeah, it's not great. Okay, so we're pivoting. That was a sidebar about choir. So now we're in episode 2, okay? Because at the end of episode 1, we learned that they have all of these members and they get a lot of money and they're wanting to build this whole town in Georgia on this
so
place
random.
Called Hog Mountain Road.
So random. Georgia.
Yeah. Georgia, USA, not Georgia the country.
No, but it's like they're trying to acquire like over 250 acres. Yeah. It's huge.
Yeah. So this planned development in Georgia prompts an investigation because there's this woman who lives there in Georgia, and she hears of the atrocities, and so she reaches out to an investigator about the Reddit page.
Dude, shout out to Reddit.
Bro, Reddit, like,
just solving mysteries around the world. You need to find anything, Reddit's the spot. Yeah.
So she gets in contact with our first character that we learned about in the very beginning, Socio, who was there doing dances at the parties.
Under a fake name, or under a...
Yes, her name was Survivor Kid.
Yes.
On Reddit. Now, they also, in episode 2, we meet a man who was a former minister whose job was to help the church in all the ways. And in 1997, there are claims, the first kind of really big claims, I would say in the modern era, against Samuel for rape and pedophilia. And this comes out in Mexico.
Like, legit hits the news. Like, yes. They're talking about it. Like, this
there's an LA Times article in 98 or whatever.
Yeah. So this is what was strange to me timeline wise is, and I feel like this, I guess hindsight's different, but I'm always like, bro, you missed the biggest signs.
Right.
You investigate this. You should have looked further.
I don't think they're missing it. I think they're willfully ignoring it.
I mean, that could be true too, but I just feel like the outside world is just like, oh, we're just gonna let them keep going.
Right. Well, yeah, we could talk about that too. So some members accuse him of sex abuse in 1997. They say there were drugs and sex abuse. One was a male who said he was sexually abused at 16. He told him that as an angel of God, he didn't have sex. The apostle, Moises Padilla, after coming out and saying I was sexually assaulted by the apostle, was kidnapped and nearly murdered after being stabbed 69 times.
And this part is a little rough because they show the body in the dock and you can see all of the knife wounds.
It's crazy. And this is what I was talking about with the mob mentality.
And it's not, I mean, I don't know. Sometimes when I talk about things on here, it makes it seem like I have like a really weird like idea about what's okay and what's not. Mm. But like, you didn't finish the job. Like, and now it's just out there.
Yeah.
Like, this is the worst PR thing that could happen.
But again, it doesn't really, like, because they
don't be
continue.
Sloppy. Don't be sloppy. Be better.
All right. We know that you would handle the job, Mark.
But also don't stab people though, you know? PSA.
So Joel, remember, he was the architect guy.
Yep.
He at the time was like in disbelief. He was like, this can't be true. He thought it was false accusations. But then he finds out that Samuel sent people to the government offices to destroy the evidence. And this is when Joel starts to be like,
tough to support that one.
Now, the church, like I said, they're like a mob. They participated in every political party in Mexico.
Gotta get your...
They said, we gotta play the field.
Gotta get your beak wet.
So they were very enmeshed with power in the institution in Mexico. Now, Samuel, he had 8 kids. They were all treated like the princes of this church and princesses. Benjamin was the oldest. Nason was the 5th, which is interesting.
Doesn't usually fall that way.
And they hated each other, Benjamin and Nason. So Nason, when his dad is still in control, he creates a radio station in the U.S. and he names Xochitl as his co-producer. At this time, she was still in high school. This is like in L.A., I believe. She felt very safe around him, but then he started touching her butt and kissing her on the lips. He asked her to meet outside of school. He would take her out to lunch, and then he took her to a small hotel. Basically, he sexually assaulted her, and anytime she tried to speak, he hooked her mouth to prevent her from speaking. Once he was done, he asked her to dance for him. Then he looked at her and said, "You're mine forever, right?" And this would happen twice a month. She gave up, and she just had a breakdown. She hid in a closet in the church and stayed there all night and imagined her life outside the one she was living. Like, she's depressed. Like, she's being sexually assaulted repeatedly by the apostle's son, and then she just can't get out. Like, this is her whole world. Then she meets this man who will later become her husband, and she likes him. But even after she is married, she is still getting raped. So, yeah, it's rough. Then Samwell dies. So now we're like, who's going to be... Who could we guess who is going to be the apostle? It?
Time for an election.
And it's Nason.
Weird.
Crazy. Then Nason tries to make Sochiel assault a 14-year-old boy. He had previously forced this boy's mom to rape her own son as a test of loyalty.
Yeah, and this is where it gets, like, when we talked earlier.
The depravity.
Yeah, and, like, the generational type thing, right? Because she now is being asked to do it to the next generation.
Right. They force you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but how can you do it to your own son? I can't.
Yeah, this is where the ick, like, doubles and triples for the rest of the docuseries.
Quazillion druples.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really bad. And so, basically, we're just learning, like, of the depravity of them. Now, there's this boy. His name was Francisco. He was dating a girl. His mom found out that they were dating. She made them both confess to Nason at his glass. He had a desk that was, like, glass. He was very invasive, asking questions to them. And he asked what color the girl's undies were, what color her nipples were, and what her private parts were like. He started to masturbate under his glass desk while they're talking. Like, ugh.
Yeah, that scene is hard to listen to.
Yeah, it's all bad. So basically that is all of episode two. Episode two is just about Nason and this depravity.
Which is really like setting the background for what's going to come in episode three.
So... I don't feel like... Did you have anything else, though, you want to talk about the Georgia thing?
Dude, it's just, like, as soon as I saw that, it just kind of hit. One, we're just going to put this compound, and they're trying to create this sort of utopia.
Right.
Right, where all of their people can go, and they have housing, and they have buildings, and they have all of these things. Number one, it's in Georgia, which just seems so random to me.
Right.
Maybe it's just, like...
Cheap land, I'm guessing.
Cheap land, and, like... People typically leave you alone in the South,
right?
Right? In rural areas especially, right. Of like, listen, whatever you do is what you do.
Right.
But it's just such a common thing that you want to create sort of this bubble for all of these people so that they don't know anything else other than what's there.
Like, for sure.
Textbook cult behavior.
Yeah.
All the way around.
I think we should write the textbook.
And again, now we have another place to go.
On our road trip. we gotta make a little map. Okay, so now we're in episode three. Because Sochiel is older now, she's married, and she's just like over it. She's like, F all this. I'm not gonna stand up for this anymore. She's ready to come out against Nason because it's being found that Nason is doing this to many, 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 many girls. So she and one of the women named Sharon, she met on Reddit.
Reddit, dude.
They reach out. Wait, Sharon? No, wrong person. Sorry. Sochiel reaches out to, but the lady from Reddit did too. They reach out to governors, politicians, celebrities, because this is like in the time of the Me Too movement.
Yeah, they're hitting up like...
Emma Stone, like A-listers.
Like,
yes. None of them respond. They did reach out, though, to a journalist named Rhonda Schwartz, who picked up their story. And so eventually they get in contact with the California Attorney General. And what they do is they start building a case against Nason. And five Jane Does... become the crux of this case because unfortunately Sochiel was too old and the statute of limitations had passed,
which is crazy.
I hate the statute of limitations.
It's so nuts.
I mean, like, I get it for like theft, but like when we're talking about sexual assault, why is that a thing?
I know. I mean, the entire third episode, I'm just like, dude, our judicial system is, there's a lot that is great and it does really well trying to manage over 300 million people. But on the micro level, you just see what some of these people, especially as we talk about it in the context of this show, like so many people, I'm just like, how is this possible?
Yeah.
But yeah, is a case established, five Jane Does, all very credible stories.
Yes.
Same idea.
So Nason was on a private jet. He landed in L.A. in June of 2019, and he was arrested. Kate was the Reddit moderator. She, not Sharon.
There probably was a Sharon on the Reddit thread,
There's
though.
Probably a Sharon. Now, they find that there was child sex abuse material on him. Like, he had all these tapes and both with adults that were non-really consenting as well as those that were consenting as well as children who obviously can't consent.
Right.
The church prays for him for 24 hours. They are in absolute denial. They believe he is innocent. They compare him to St. Paul. Hey, he's not St. Paul.
Not close though, huh? Not at all.
Three women were also arraigned with him. Who were kind of like the, what's the Epstein chick's name?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. What is her name?
It starts with an M or something.
It's a
like Frenchy name.
It is. I was going to say, it's very foreign. Keep going. I'm looking.
Okay. Anyways, these women were kind of like her in that they almost procured the women. They groomed the women. They procured the girls for him to later abuse, and they would abuse them as well. So three of these women are arraigned with him. One of them is named Alondra. What's the lady's name?
Maxwell.
Ghislaine.
Yeah.
Ghislaine Maxwell, yes. So they're like Ghislaine. So now, back to this. One of the women, her name was Alondra, and Alondra had been in this her whole life. Like, she married a guy who was a convert, like a white dude who joined this group.
He seems like a real outsider.
I literally was like, is there any other white people in there? Like, it's interesting to me.
Like, yeah, he definitely, he's like, likes this chick. And so he just starts going to the church.
For sure. Which was cool. I liked that. But
which isn't, I mean, that every teenage boy in high school? Absolutely. Why are you at church? Well, I really like this girl.
My teenage boyfriend came to my Greek Orthodox church. And yeah,
the things we do for love.
I was like, can you not be here? So she gets arrested and her husband's like, what? Like, she is so innocent. Like, she's this little church girl. Well, you come to find out that basically she had been being abused her whole life and she was taught to do this. And then she was doing the same.
Kind of crazy though, right? Like, cause he's like, dude, you need to own up to this. Like, he's
the hero.
Yeah, like, I don't want to say, like, he didn't have sympathy for her, but he was like, dude, you're guilty.
Yeah. Like, he was like, I love you, but you need to do what's right, and you need to admit guilt.
Kind of crazy. I feel like that's not, would not be a normal response, no?
He's the hero.
Hey, shouts to him.
So, he tells her to plead guilty and to own up to what she did, and she did end up doing that, and she got 4 years. So, not too bad. I mean, not great, but not too bad. Now, for Nason, the lawyers just kept on postponing the trial. Basically, this was a whole cluster.
Top to bottom. Because
the prosecutors effed up.
Listen, this is community college lawyership at its best right now.
I think my understanding is, and I might be wrong, so don't come for me, lawyers or, you know, law students, that they didn't provide evidence to the defense, and you can't do that. And so because of that, there was at risk of the whole case being thrown out because he had 19 counts against him.
19.
And what ended up happening was he took a plea deal for 3 counts, which were the least damning ones.
Right.
And so,
which is just so Bush League. Like,
it's pretty effed.
Dude, you got to be better at your job. This is not like a traffic violation.
Right.
This is a massive.
This is, like, systematic.
Be better.
Yeah. So at his sentencing, the five Jane Does give their victim impact statements.
Oh, which also they are supposed to know about the plea deal according to the California Constitution.
Right, and that didn't
prior
happen.
To it being given to him, and it did not happen.
Correct. So Jane Doe, one of the Jane Does states that she was raped for years and she tried to protect her little sister from him. Jane Doe 2 spoke of how he used her father's absence against her. He said, "I'm your father, I'm your protector," and then raped her. Jane Doe 3 read something from her journal saying she had a breakdown and that she was still in pain, and that her mom blamed her for what happened with Nason, and she was only 15. Jane Doe 5 states that she was kidnapped by his men in Mexico because they heard that she was going to speak out, and she was only rescued by the FBI because she was a U.S. citizen.
The sad part that, again, I do think episode 3 kind of trails on too long, but watching the actual trial, and you can hear them crying in the background the whole time. Sad. It's a very emotional, really sad.
So the judge does lay it out on him. He's like, "You're a sexual predator." Like,
yeah, he doesn't
hold back.
But he basically says, one of the Jane Does pleads for 4 additional years.
Mm-hmm.
Please give him more. Mm-hmm. And he basically says that my hands are tied because of what the lawyer said. But then he straight up looks him straight in the eye and says who he really is, which was a really good move.
So the judge sentences him to 16 years. Now, today, the church continues to deny any involvement with him. They say this trial was never going to be fair. It would never happen. None of this was going to go down for him. So he just had to take a plea because this will get him reunified with us sooner. Like, the mental gymnastics that they go through to just be like, it can't be. You know what I mean? Like,
dude, and that's the best line that the judge gives. He says, "I never cease to amazed what people will do in the name of religion."
Yeah.
And I was like, that's the whole thing.
Yeah.
That's the whole show. I was like, he nailed it on its head right there.
The show ends with some subtext, and it says that Alondra was given 4 years, like I said, and her husband are going to be entering witness protection after. Like I said, they're mobsters.
Yeah, I mean, they're
69 times stabbed.
Yeah.
And then the victims, the Jane Does, they gave a statement and said, basically, at the end of this wasn't worth it.
Right.
We have been victimized and harassed, and we are threatened daily.
Yeah.
And that's the end.
It's no happy ending, no silver lining, no anything, and this church continues to function.
Yeah. I think the only happy thing is that, I mean, at least he's in jail right now, and the women got out.
But I don't know.
It's a rough one.
But, I mean, throughout the entire series, like, a lot of them not showing their faces.
Yeah.
A lot of them,
You
know, and the one thing that, because social media does get condemned a lot for a lot of things. There's like that montage of TikToks of like these girls pulling their head coverings off and like saying that they're getting out and they're doing all of this. So it's like, I guess that's the tiniest of silver linings, if all possible, but it's really, really sad.
We wish you healing. That's all we can say. Well, anything else?
No, I got no jokes. Nothing great.
The only thing I got is one wreck. I read this book. And it's a cult book. It's not a real cult book. It's a fiction, but it's called The Night We Burned, and I feel like y'all would like it. So check it out. And that's it, y'all. Do not drink the Kool-Aid. Stay far away from this group, and we'll see you later.
See ya.